incredible. On the and then I'll begin to talk about twisty facts in topological phases, and I'll first describe basically do a review on describing the abelian topological phases using a Chern Simon theory, and then I'm going to introduce a central idea of this talk, which is to use the anionic symmetry in the underlying theory. And this involves relabeling the anions, and we'll look at some known example on toroidal bilayer fractional quantum Hall system or the simply laced Lie algebras. So the main part of this talk is on topological twist effects. I'm first going to describe some theoretical proposal on how to realize them, but that's not the main goal of this talk. So we'll look at some examples and see that the twist effects are indeed non-abelian objects, so they satisfy multi-channel fusion properties. And I'm hoping that I'll have time to go to the punchline, which is there are two punchlines. So the first one is that we're going to see how do we distinguish this kind of topological defects, which are semi-classical objects, from quantum anionic excitations from a true topological phase. So the first signature of this is that defects are satisfying a modified spin statistics theorem. So the exchange phase is no longer related to 360 twist, but it's related to multiple twist. And the second punchline is that the braiding S and the exchange T matrix no longer satisfies the algebraic relation that they are supposed to satisfy if they were modular transformation. But instead, they satisfy another set of algebraic relation, which are called congruent transformations. And this basically forms a subgroup inside the modular group. OK, so let me begin by describing what is Ising quasi-particles. So the easiest way, I guess, to conceptually look at Ising quasi-particle is to look at a chiral p-wave superconductor. So here is a chiral p-wave superconductor, and if I cut an edge of the system, since it's a chiral, I will have chiral edge modes. And there will be a fermionic degree of freedom living on the edge of the system. And since these are fermions, 360 degree rotation gives you minus one. And because of that, the exact zero energy state at zero momentum is avoided if you have a closed boundary. But if I put a flux vortex, there will be a pi Berry phase, which will exactly cancel that minus sign of 360 rotation. And if I have that, then the exact zero energy state would appear. So the Majorana zero mode associated with this pi flux is called an Ising quasi particle. So the nice thing about Ising anions is that if I have a pair of Ising anion, it corresponds to a two-level system. So they form a Hilbert space which can be empty or occupied. Or I can write this down as an algebraic relation. So if I have a pair of Ising anions, so this is taking the fusion of a pair of Ising anion, and it can either form the vacuum state or the fermionic state. So if I have a series of Ising anions, then these basically forms your qubits. So a pair of Ising anion forms one qubit, and if you have a bunch of those, and you have a certain number of degenerate ground states. So if you count the dimension of the ground state, it's going to be given by square root of 2 to the number of Ising anions. So in a sense, each Ising anion carries a dimension of square root of 2, which is called the quantum dimension. So moreover, they satisfy non-abelian braiding operations, which are nice. So if I consider a system of four Ising anions, I can consider either exchanging the first pair or the second and third. And it turns out that these two operations don't commute. And even nicer, if I start out with the trivial ground state, and I perform the exchange between the second and the third Ising anion, I will end up with an entangled state. So So in theory, it could give rise to topological quantum computation. So more recently, there are proposals on how to realize these Ising-Cauchy particles as Majorana zero mode excitations of heterostructures. So the first proposal was done by Liang Fu and Charlie Kane. And what they were trying to look at is on the surface of a, or the edge of a quantum spin torr insulator with a ferromagnetic and superconductor junction. So at the interface, you'll end up with a Majorana zero mode, which sort of behaves like an Ising-Cauchy particle. Another proposal was proposed by the Maryland group. And what they are proposing is that they put consider a strong spin-orbit coupled semiconductor and put it on top of a superconductor so that it is superconducting by proximity effect. And if you have an in-plane magnetic field, then it will open up a gap in the bulk 1D system and end up with a Majorana zero mode at the end of the system. So more interestingly, Majorana zero mode actually could exist in three dimensions also, and we can consider that as a point defect excitation in the superconducting interface between a topological insulator and a trivial insulator with an HC over 2E flux passing across the interface. Okay, so we'd like to ask one question. So can we do better? So the first material that are proposed to have Ising-Cauchy particles is the Pfaffian state of by Moore and Reed. But the fractional quantum Hall state usually requires very low temperature, high mobility, and high magnetic field. So if I forget about fractional quantum Hall system, I can look at chiral p-wave superconductor. But there's an issue of asking whether strontium ruthenate is really chiral, and it might not be chiral. I'm not going to say anything about that here. So for the heterostructure proposal, it actually requires smooth interfaces so that all the interface, say, between topological insulator and superconductor or superconductor to ferromagnets has to be very smooth so that there will be no low lying energy, low lying degree of freedom along the interface for the Majorana zero mode to escape. So it would be very desirable if we can realize Ising-Cauchy particles in a non-chiral homogeneous material without any external magnetic field. And even better, we can ask, is it possible to have non-abelian objects coming from an underlying abelian system? Okay. So fortunately, these two questions, the answer is yes. And we can achieve doing that by considering defects in certain abelian systems. So in today's talk, we're gonna look at one particular construction is considering twist defects in bilayer quantum Hall system or some exact solvable lattice models. And there are actually a lot of other similar proposals. So we could look at discrimination in topological crystalline superconductors, which are homogeneous. And we can also look at Ising-Cauchy particles in three dimensions, but today we're only going to talk about the first subject. Okay, so the issue here is that instead of realizing this kind of system, I want to ask a fundamental question. So are defects really anions? Okay, so if I look at the five half states or the Kitaev honeycomb model or Ising anions in PPSiP superconductors. So these are really deconfined quantum excitations. However, the Majorana bound states in heterostructures or any kind of defect system, they are really semi-classical defects. So the question here is that are topological defects can be treated as the same footing as quantum excitations? So this is the issue. And the answer of that is no. And I'll show that there is these two concepts are separated by a fundamental statistical way. So the underlying statistics of defects and excitations are even qualitatively different. Okay, so I'm gonna go into the main part of the talk. So I'll first start with a review on abelian topological states. And all the states I'm going to consider can be described by an effective Chern-Simon theory. So here, the Lagrangian involves a multi-component U1 gauge field, say there are n of those. And the topological field theory is described by this K matrix, which is symmetric and has integer entry and has determinant bigger than one, so that it has a ground state degeneracy. So if I look at the edge of a system, so let's say I have a topological fluid in 2 plus 1 and I have 1 plus 1 edge. So the edge of the system can be described by boson theory with the same K matrix. And the quasi-particle operators can be written down as vertex operator form, where these phis are the boson operators. And A here is an integer-valued lattice vector in n dimensions. So I'm going to call this an Anion lattice. And the Anion lattice is given by this notation gamma star. And I put a star there because I remember yesterday that Greg used this star, and it's basically saying that it's something strange. So if I consider fusion of two quasi-particles, so what I imagine myself doing is that I take a product of these two operators. So I will have e to the ia phi here and e to the ib phi here. And it turns out it's basically just going to be e to the ia plus b phi. So what it means is that if I have an anion quasi-particle A and fuse it with quasi-particle B, I'll get A plus B. So what it means is that fusion of quasi-particle is the same thing as vector addition in the anion lattice. Okay. So moreover, we can do quasi-particle operator expansion or a product expansion. So if I take a correlation function between two quasi-particles, I'll get so this z here is really the complex coordinates of tau plus ix along this one plus one edge. And I'll get some rational function with some possibly fractional exponents. So this exponent is fractional because it involves this inverse of a K-matrix. And it's fractional because the K-matrix, the determinant of the K-matrix is bigger than 1. What's that?
Should the exponent be negative?
Right. So if I put a dagger, it would be right. Okay. So I can also use the bulk boundary correspondence, and instead of looking at the one plus one edge, I can look at quasi whole excitations in the bulk, and now the complex coordinate becomes x plus iy, where x y are the two dimensional real space coordinates. And the correlation function takes the exact same form with the exact same exponent. So what it means is that if I consider now dragging one quasi-particle around the other quasi-particle, then I'll get some braiding phase with the exponents a, k inverse b. Or if I do exchange, I'll also get the same exponent, but it's really a half of that because I'm really doing a half of a full braid. Okay. And the nice thing about spin statistics theorem is that the exchange phase is actually can be identified with a 360 twist of the quasi-particle. So we can actually imagine that the quasi-particle is not actually point-like, it's more like a ribbon. And if I twist the ribbon 360 degrees, I'll end up with an abelian phase. Okay. So we can notice that the entire topological field theory is described by the K matrix because all the braiding and exchange are described by the same exponent. So in the anion lattice, we'll notice that there are some local particles which doesn't braid around other quasi-particles. So these local particles are sort of the building blocks of the of the theory. So for example, electrons are local particles, or I guess at a theoretical point of view, we want charged two E bosons to be the fundamental particles. So in the anion lattice, these particles are labeled by the image of the K matrix. So if you plug these into the braiding phase formula, you can see that this K will cancel the K inverse, And everything in the exponent would be an integer, and e to the 2 pi of an integer is always 1. So because of that, is this this kind of sublattice, the image of K describes local particles. So if we look at the following example, if I take the 2-2-1 state, so this will form an anion lattice of the following form. So I'm drawing this on a triangular lattice so that the exponent's phase corresponds to an Euclidean inner product of the lattice. Okay. So the local particles corresponds to a sublattice, which is the image of this original lattice under K. And if I further assume that the K matrix has all the diagonal entry of the K matrix is even, then what it means is that all local particles are actually bosons. Then I can imagine I condense the local quasi particles, and the anionic contents now becomes the quotient of the anion lattice by the lattice of local quasi particles. Okay. So in this picture, what you can see is that in the quotient lattice, you only have three types of particles. So you have the trivial particle. And this particle is identified with this particle because this one is in the denominator. So you in this quotient lattice, basically, you can see that there's only the trivial particle, or the red one, or the blue one. So what it means is that the anion contents is a group which is Z mod 3. Okay, so you don't have. Right, so the diagonal part is even. Right. So if I assume that the local particles are bosons, because here everything here would be an even integer, so the spin is 1. Okay. All right. So then if I regroup the braiding phase and the 360 twist into matrix form, so this is the same thing as the braiding phase, and this is just a normalization. That makes sure that this matrix is going to be unitary. So this matrix has entries running from through the quotient lattice. So for the previous case, this A goes from 0, 1, 2, 3. Sorry, it's just 0, 1, 2. So it's a 3 by 3 matrix. And the T matrix is the same is the same rank matrix that it is diagonal. And the diagonal entry is just given by the spin of the quasi particles, the exchange phase of the quasi particles. So it turns out that these two matrices satisfies some algebraic relation, and we can ask, okay, why do they satisfy this kind of algebraic relation, which seemingly comes from nowhere? So we can look at this problem by understanding in a geometrical way. So if I have some quasi particle in the in a closed system, say a sphere, I can imagine I add a handle and paste these two holes into a closed torus. Okay, but it depends on what the boundary condition I put on these two holes. And the boundary condition is exactly the same thing as saying what kind of flux I put across these, which is the same thing as what kind of quasi particle I have at these two holes. So so what this shows us is that there will be a ground state degeneracy on a torus where there's a one-to-one correspondence between the degenerate ground states and the anion quasi-particle type. So we can ask, okay, what is the symmetry of a torus? And it turns out that it's going to be the modular symmetries, modular transformations. So here I'm drawing this in drawing the torus in by a square where I identify the sides. So the T matrix turns out that it corresponds to a Dane twist. So if I look at the torus, I can cut the along the cylindrical direction, twist 360 degrees, and then paste it back. So that's a Dane twist. And the S matrix corresponds to a 90 degree rotation. And if you take the product of S and T, it turns out that it corresponds to a 60 degree rotation. So I can do 60 degree rotation because it's sort of like the Brillouin zone of graphene, which is a hexagon, and I can identify the sides to form a torus, and 60 degree rotation therefore give us a symmetry in the problem. So ST is 60 degree rotation, and because of that, ST cube is going to be 180 rotation. And it's natural to ask, okay, so 180 rotation should be the same thing as doing 90 degree rotation twice, which is S squared. So this basically explains the algebraic relation that the modular transformation are supposed to satisfy. Okay. So anionic symmetry is an extra content of the anionic theory, and we are going to use this to realize twist defects. And so an anionic relabeling symmetry is basically the following. So if I take an anion lattice vector, I can relabel this anion lattice vector by a matrix transformation. So this lambda here is some invertible matrix with integral entries. And it's an anionic symmetry if it leaves the K matrix invariant. So it doesn't change the braiding and braiding statistics of the underlying abelian theory. So let's look at an example. So if I take again the 2-2-1 state and look at the anionic lattice, I can consider either a mirror flip or 60 degree rotation of this lattice. And what it will do is that it will change red to blue and blue to red. So in this case, what we can see is that since the K matrix is left unchanged, and the braiding and the spin information are just given by the phase of that is just given by the K matrix, is determined by the K matrix. And because of that, if I do an anion relabeling symmetry that satisfies that leaves the K matrix invariant, then both the braiding and spin information will not be changed under that anion relabeling operation. So we notice that there's a subtle difference between this kind of symmetry and the symmetry that we usually know in symmetry breaking phase. So this symmetry is not necessarily a symmetry in the Hamiltonian, but instead it's a symmetry of the topological field theory. It's a symmetry of the braiding and exchange information. So let us look at some examples of anionic symmetry. So the simplest example we can look at is the Kitaev-Torre code, which is also the Z2 discrete gauge theory in the confined phase. So the K matrix is given by a two-dimensional K matrix 0, 2, 2, 0. And lambda basically is the anionic symmetry where it interchange the electric quasi-particle to the magnetic quasi-particle. So you interchange E and M. Another example is if we look at the bilayer quantum Hall system described by K matrix of this form, and you can see that now the symmetry operation that flip the layer index of the bilayer system is going to leave the K matrix unchanged, and therefore this is going to be an anionic symmetry. And we can also look at the ADE classification for abelian fractional quantum Hall states at level one. So the K matrix here is given by the Cartan matrix of the simply laced Lie algebra. And the symmetry is given by the symmetry of the Dynkin diagram, which corresponds to the outer automorphisms of the Lie algebra. So if I look at the A series, the Dynkin diagram is basically just a simple chain. And I can take a mirror image that sends the left side to the right side. And this corresponds to a Z2 symmetry, a Z2 anionic symmetry. And if I look at the D series, there's a mirror symmetry where I flip this dot to this dot. So there's a mirror symmetry about the horizontal axis. And this also corresponds to an anionic symmetry. We can also look at a richer symmetry in D4, which is the Lie algebra SO8. So there are four dots, and there's a triality symmetry. So for instance, this diagram is invariant under 120 rotation. So there's a threefold rotation in this diagram, and there's also mirror. So it forms a richer symmetry group. So the anionic symmetry now is labeled by elements in S3, the permutation groups of three elements, which is the same thing as the dihedral group, symmetry group of a triangle. Okay. So we're only going to look at one particular object here. So this is a pictorial representation of a twist defect. Okay, so it is a point defect in our topological fluid, and it satisfies the following property. So if I imagine I have an anion quasi-particle A in the underlying abelian theory, if I drag it once around, then it will change type. It will change from A to lambda A. So this characterizes what is a twist defect. So it's diagrammatically represented by this way using a branch cut. So if I pass the anion across the branch cut, it basically changes type from A to lambda A. So let us look at some examples. So the first example I have is basically a lot of those works are done here. And this is so basically what this diagram say is we're looking at dislocation in the Kitaev-Torrey code or the Wen-Plaquette model. And what this defect does is that if I drag an E quasi-particle around, then it will change its type and becomes an M quasi-particle. And this might not be a pure mathematical model, and it might have something to do with real-life physics. So if I consider a two-dimensional S-wave superconductor, so in many sense, it's very similar to the Kitaev-Torrey code. So for instance, I can identify the M quasi-particle of the Torrey code with a flux vortex, and the psi quasi-particle with a fermion or electron, and the E quasi-particles, by definition, is the composition of the M quasi-particle with the psi quasi-particle, which is to say that E is identified with a flux together with a fermion. So we can ask, okay, so what is if I can identify the Kitaev-Torrey code with a 2D S-wave superconductor, then what is the dislocation in the Kitaev-Torrey code? So physically, it is mimicking the following structure. So if I have an interface between a quantum spin Hall insulator with anti-ferromagnetic insulator and superconductor. And let me assume that the superconductor is so strong that this superconductivity penetrate everywhere into the bulk of the system. Or I can assume that the Majorana zero mode has a localization length much less than the penetration depth of the superconductivity into the rest of the system. So in this case, I can imagine the following procedure. If I take an M quasi-particle, which is a flux vortex, once around the point defect, then it will change type. It will change to an E quasi-particle. So what it means is that it will associate an extra fermion if I drag the vortex once around the point defect. So this is related to a fermion party pump in a 1D system. Okay. So another system is proposed by the Stanford group. So what they looked at dislocation in bilayer quantum Hall system. And it is very simple to understand, because if you have an anions on top layer, and if I go once around this twist, it will go downstairs to the bottom layer, right? So it changes anion type. So this shows that there are some theoretical proposals in realizing twist defects, but we are not going to describe how do we really realize twist defects in real-life system here, but instead I'm going to describe what are their properties. So the purpose of showing these two slides is basically showing that I'm not completely crazy. Okay. Right. So the first thing we notice that is that we can actually consider defects and anions together. So for instance, I can consider fusing a defect with a quasi-particle. So what it means is that I can stick an anion quasi-particle right to the defect. Okay. But we can notice the following. So if I put on a magnifying glass and look into the detail of the system, and it might look like the following, right? So the A strings that originally stick into the defects, if I look closer, it might split off into a B quasi-particle, and the B quasi-particle goes once around defect, becomes lambda B, and then joins back to the quasi-particle string. So this means that now this quasi-particle string will change type also. It goes from A to A plus lambda minus 1B, right? Because it loses B and regains lambda B on the other side, right? So what this shows is that if I fuse the defects with an anion A, it's actually the same thing as fusing the defects with this anion, okay? Or put it in mathematical terms, this means that the species label, which corresponds to what quasi-particles you fuse with the defects, actually is not the whole anion content, but instead is forming the is a quotient, because everything in the denominator will not affect the species label. Okay. All right. So let's consider the following situation. So if I have a twofold defect, so what it means is that if the anionic symmetry has order two, so if I apply the anionic symmetry twice, it's the same thing as doing nothing. So what it means is that although a 360 braid doesn't go back to itself, but I can imagine dragging my quasi-particle twice, and it will change types twice and go back to itself. So what it means is that I can actually detect the species label, which is to detect what kind of anion I stick right into the defect statistically by measuring the phase of this Wilson operation. Okay. So what it is saying is that the species label is statistically measurable by a Wilson measurement. So let us look at a concrete example. So if I take the Kitaev toroidal, so again, the K matrix is given by 0, 2, 2, 0. And the anionic symmetry is the electric magnetic duality that changes E to M and vice versa. And in this case, we are diagrammatically representing the dislocation by a branch cut, where if I drag an E particle across the branch cut, I'll end up with an M quasi-particle. And let me label the bare defects by sigma zero. Okay. So we can ask, okay, how many species labels are there for a twist defect? So it turns out there are two. Okay, so there are the bare defects where there's nothing sticking into the defects, or I could have the other species, which is one, and this is the same thing as sticking an E quasi-particle right at the defect. But you can see that now, if I again put on a magnifying glass, what it might happen is that the E quasi-particle actually goes once around, becomes an M quasi-particle, and then stick right at the defect. So what it means is that if I fuse the bare defects or dress the bare defects by E quasi-particle, that's the same thing as actually fusing this with the M quasi-particle. Okay. So this shows that there are two possible species for a twist defect in the Kitaev toroidal. And these are indeed can be measured by the statistical measurement of the double Wilson loop, and it has two distinct phases. So this one has minus I eigenvalue, and this one has plus I eigenvalue. Okay. So now let's look at non-abelian fusion. So if I again assume that the defects are twofold, so that the symmetry operation is order two, then what it means is that since there are for each defect there's a branch cut sticking out, but because the symmetry operation has order two, this means that these two branch cut can cancel each other. Or the other way to say this is that if I drag a quasi-particle around a pair of defects, it actually doesn't change type. Okay. So now let us consider the following situation. So if I have a good have a B quasi particle going once around the defects on the right side, and it becomes lambda B, and it joins back. So what this diagram shows is that there's actually a quasi particle string A, which is the same thing as B minus lambda B, sticking right into the system. Okay. And let us consider the following. So if I say that I put remove my glasses, or step back and look at it from a longer range scale, or if I imagine shrinking this bubble, then you see this picture. Okay, so everything just got smaller, but this string still persists. So it cannot close unless it hits another quasi particle. Okay. So let us consider even shrinking this smaller and smaller until you don't see it anymore. So what it tells us is that there's eventually going to be a quasi particle string and end somewhere. Okay. So what it shows is that if you look at longer range scale, or put these two defects close to each other until a point that you don't see the distinguishment between these two anymore, then you just basically see a quasi particle, A. Okay. So, or put it in mathematical terms, what it means is that there's a fusion channel. There's a possibility where a pair of defects can be fused into a billion quasi particle A, which is given by this form. But notice that not all quasi particles are possible. So it is only possible if the quasi particles are of this particular form, which means that it has to be in the image of one minus lambda. Okay. So let us look at some examples in the toy code. So if I have a pair of defects, well, I can imagine I have nothing sticking in. So this means that it fills to the vacuum channel. Or I could imagine the following. If I have an E quasi particle go once around, it becomes M. And these two joins together to give me a psi quasi particle, right? So what this means is that now I have the following fusion rules. So if I take a pair of twist defects, now it can either fuse into either the vacuum channel or the fermion channel. Okay. So this looks exactly the same as the Ising quasi particle. With quantum dimension 2. But what's different is that since defects come with species labels, now I can consider fusing two defects with opposite species. So for the non-trivial defects, it is dressed with a quasi-particle string. And because of that, if I fuse two distinct species defects together, it will not give me 1 plus psi anymore, but it will actually either give me the E outgoing channel or M outgoing channel. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So this is only the only technical slide of my talk. Okay. I'm going to show how do we do exchange, but I'm not actually going to go into show algebra. I'm just going to show that we can do it. Okay. So let us take the usual diagram. So where I have a pair of defects and fuse into a fixed outgoing channel A here, I can imagine doing exchange by rotating this diagram 180 degrees. So if you do that, then the quasi particle string pattern becomes twisted like the following, right? So what we can imagine doing is that we can extract a string, a closed string, from the underlying condensate. Okay, so I can have a freedom of choose what string to extract, and I can choose a string B, which go around in the opposite direction, and these will cancel the other string. Okay, and I can put the gray string on the top level, but this will involve some crossing phase. Okay, so if I cancel this and put this gray string on the top level, okay, so then I'll end up with some crossing phase, or technically half of some crossing phase. And it looks similar to the original pattern. However, you can notice that the string on the left side is actually correspond to the string on the right side, right? So here, the right side going up is B, but here, the B string is going up on the left side. So how do we change it back to the original configuration? So the way to do this is to extract the double loop from the condensate. And the double loop, again, will have a phase, or in the toy code case, it's going to be plus or minus I, depending on the species. So if I do that, then I can switch this string back to the right side. And now this looks exactly the same as the original configuration. Okay. So what it means is that I'm doing exchange here of a pair of twist defects with a fixed outgoing channel. And I will end up with a phase, which is a U1 phase given by the crossing and the phase of the double loop. So the crossing is not very important, but I want you to remember the double loop. Okay. Right. So if I consider now an exchange of a pair of quasi particles, so what I mean by that is since there are many outgoing fusion channels, so I can take the average of that and do this following weighted sum, and magically it will become a U1 phase. Okay. So basically, it's solving some Gaussian sum. But then we can consider a different situation. So instead of doing exchange, let me consider the following. So if I do a 360-degree twist, notice that it doesn't go back to itself because it's dressed by some classical degree of freedom or some classical texture, which is represented by a branch cut. And there's no way you can change this pattern back to this pattern. But instead, you can do a 360 twist again. And since we're starting off with a twofold symmetry, so a pair of branch cut can cancel. So everywhere around here, the branch cut will cancel, and you're left with the exact configuration as you start with. So we can try to calculate the phase from a double twist. And remember that each defects can be associated with a quasi particle string sticking right at the defect. And if I do a double twist, then I'll end up with this string pattern. And this is exactly the same thing as a double loop. Okay. So it turns out that all the examples we have checked, the exchange phase can be identified with the phase of a double loop up to a constant Z8 phase. Okay. So what it means is that we actually have a modified spin statistics theorem where the exchange phase is identified with the phase of multiple twists rather than just 360 rotation. Okay. So furthermore, I can imagine doing a full braid between defects with arbitrary, could be different species, lambda 1, lambda 2. So the definition of that is the same thing as doing a twist, doing an average over the outgoing abelian channel. And I can do the Gaussian sum, and we can do this because we know what is the individual terms. And it will end up with some unitary matrix. Okay. So we can ask, okay, then we have the S matrix and the T matrix, and whether or not they satisfy the algebraic relation that they are supposed to satisfy. So do they satisfy the algebraic relation for modular transformation that comes from the symmetry of a torus? And the answer of that is no. We end up with a new set of algebraic relation, which is given by the following. So if I take the S and T matrix and square it, it becomes some conjugation operator where C will square to 1, and it is a center element that it commutes with both the S and T matrix. Okay, so we can ask, okay, how do we understand this algebraic relation? So is there a geometric way of understanding this? So it turns out there is. So if I take the twist defects problem and you do the same trick where I add a handle and paste the two holes back together, I end up with a torus. But then we remember that there's a classical texture in the problem, which is decorated by a branch cut, which goes once around a non-trivial cycle in torus. And all the symmetry operation better respect that classical texture. So what it means is that I cannot do Dane twist anymore. Because if I do Dane twist, then I will change this branch cut to another form, which is not identical to the original configuration. So what it means is that now I can identify the T matrix with the double twist, because we are doing 720 rotations. I cannot do one Dane twist, but I can do a double Dane twist. Okay. And the S matrix here is no longer identified with 90 degree rotation, but it is identified with the Dane twist along the other direction that doesn't mess with the original branch cut. So if I do that, then there's a geometrical understanding of this, and this is called the gamma 02 congruent subgroup of the modular group. So I only end up with a subgroup of modular group where the S and T matrix represents. Okay, so let me leave you with the conclusion. Thanks.